Sierra Hull is my guest in the second hour of today's program. Sierra Hull has just released on Rounder her latest masterpiece, I think, 25 Trips. Sierra Hull was a guest on this program when her Grammy-nominated Weighted Mind was released, and there's so much going on, and she continues to raise her game, if I can be cliche, and I can be. She continues to raise her game with her composition and her lyrics, her singing, her arrangements. We're going to hear a lot about that in the second hour from Sierra Hull. She has a lot to say about the music. She's involved in 25 Trips. It's 25 years. That's how old. Last time there was a lot of references to 22 on Weighted Mind. We talked about those. This is 25 Trips. Took her a while to put this together. But when you hear it and hear her describe everything that went into the songs and the guests that are on it, you'll get it. Sierra Hull's a very, very special artist. I'm so happy to have her back. My guest today, Sierra Hull. Sierra Hull, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm so happy to have a chance to talk to you again. I've seen you so many times over the years, and the 25 Trips album, which is, the entire thing's been released. When was it released? Give me the release date.
February 28th.
Okay, not too long ago. There are 13 cuts on it. You have assembled, and I want to give credit to all the people you've put on here for the musicianship and everything else they contribute, because it's just a wonderful collection of musicians and songs. And I try to think of a way to describe this. And I've been driving around thinking, how do I describe what you've done with your voice? Here's the best way I can describe it. I'm thinking, you know, people are always talking about now that part of a thing, that issue's become weaponized, or that's become, and that's not appropriate, but I think instrumentationized. I think your voice is an instrument now more than I've ever noticed it. I think you are an additional instrument into the mix of all the great musicians that you have.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Do you feel like your voice is really, it's still going to grow, it's still going to mature, it's still got ways to develop and things for you to learn, but do you feel like your vocals on this, there's some really, really nice vocals on this. Not that they weren't nice before, but I just feel like your voice is now part of the band.
So singing and I'm always working on, you know, singing, playing, and writing, all three of those things all the time. But I really think, vocally over the last few years, as I've sort of continued to just write and explore different things, I've certainly become more comfortable within my own voice. Something that, you know, I'm always working on. So I really appreciate you saying so.
Well, and I said this when we talked about the last album, the last release, which was Weighted Mind. I thought your voice was really starting to come in. And when I listened to this one, and again, not that anything before, you know, when you were 22 wasn't good, but I just feel like you're learning the more control of your voice, and it's like now your instrumentation, which is for you alone, is always phenomenal. You've won so many awards as a mandolin player, but everything seems to be working together. Everything seems to be melding together, and then I want to talk about the musicians, because the compositions that you have, I don't know how you recorded this, but everybody seems to be of one mind.
Yeah, well, that's exciting to hear. That was certainly the goal. We recorded the record a bunch of different ways, actually, and that was sort of somewhat by design. With this record, things that I've done in the past, my first couple records, which mostly had, my first two records only had sort of that traditional bluegrass instrumentation. There were some things on there that certainly weren't straight ahead bluegrass.
Oh yeah, sure.
All the way back to my Secrets album,
right.
or Daybreak. You know, both of those had a mix of things, but they were certainly more traditional in instrumentation than before, than this record. And so Weighted Mind sort of moved me out of that a little bit by just actually stripping things away, not necessarily adding new stuff, but taking things away. So, you know, doing that project really gave me a chance to kind of discover what it sounded like to pull, you know, the instrumentation down to mostly mandolin and voice,
mm-hmm.
with bass as the really only other accompaniment for the majority of the record, you know. And so I think that really kind of helped me figure out a little bit about who I am when there's nothing else there. And so when I went in to make this record, the 25 Trips record, I knew that I didn't want to have a record that was that sparse again. I wanted to reintroduce that band feeling, but I also didn't want to lose that feeling of dynamics that you can get sometimes only by stripping things away. And so I think doing the Weight of Mind record really kind of helped me be able to have a better balance of, you know, what that felt like with a full band this time around. And we were actually adding more instrumentation to some of the tracks, first time having things like drums and piano on the track.
I have piano written down here so that I could remind you. Yeah, piano and drums. There's a lot more electric. There's a lot more electric string instruments.
And then just actually like more strings type parts with cello and fiddle. So, you know, just in general, we kind of recorded the record three different ways. Some of the tracks we started just with me, mandolin and voice, or in some cases guitar, voice, like whatever. I played a bunch of different instruments on the record and just kind of stacked a bunch of my own harmonies this time around, which was a little different than what I have done in the past. I mean, I've played guitar a little bit on some of the previous records and you know, sang a little harmony here and there, but this was the first time really kind of leaning into being able to use the studio in a different way. So the track 25 Trips, you know, it's like I sang all my own harmony vocals on that, so getting to go in and essentially just layer a bunch of things on top of my main vocal track was really fun. And so that was kind of one approach to that. We added bass. We actually just recorded the track with just mandolin and vocals, and then we added bass, and then we added strings. We added the fiddle and the cello part. So that track was kind of built from the ground up. Some of the tracks like Escape, Come to Mind, Envy, those were really built from the ground up. But then there's tracks like How Long or The Last Minute or Poison, where we actually went in with a band, even Beautifully Out of Place actually was recorded with a band. We layered a little bit on top of it after, but you know, we definitely have probably about half the record that was actually tracked with the band, and the other half was either tracked just starting with me and building from the ground up, or, you know, having it be more of a live, raw track like Everybody's Talking or Ceiling to the Floor. Those, we really wanted those two tracks. That's me playing guitar on there and singing. So it's like kind of trying to express what it would feel like shortly after I wrote these songs if I were to just be sitting in the living room singing and playing those. So we wanted to kind of have a wide variety of sounds, and I think recording all these different ways kind of helped us achieve that, if that makes sense.
It does, and that's exactly the way I want you to describe it, because I cannot. But I can hear these things as you're talking about them, and the people that listen to the music out there will pick up on these things. Let me ask you something about the title cut, 25 Trips. There's a lot of time things going on in there. I mean, it starts out with that real funky mandolin bit, but the time changes and things slow down and things... And I know the whole record is about, well, if you see the album cover, you have a big clock, and you even have the Father Time. So you're kind of making comments about time. And 25 Trips, I thought, was just sort of, it's a great, great song. I've listened to it so many times, the title cut. There's so many things that happen in there, musically and also time-wise. There's things that, it's like a couple of different songs put together, and then they all come out the right.
Yeah, it's funny. So that particular thing, that particular song, it's not, it's definitely one of the more quirky tracks on the record. It's not your kind of conventional song form in terms of verse, chorus, solo, that kind of thing. And believe it or not, I had these lyrics kind of just jotted down on my phone. 25 Trips Around the Sun is long enough to make a fool out of anyone. Like, I had all of this written down at some point, and then I happened to be just sitting down improvising, playing, kind of noodling with my mandolin, and started playing that opening riff, the doom doop doom doop doom doop doom doop doom. And, for some reason I just thought, oh, well, this would be interesting to play this and sing over it. Like to have a song built over this. So it really started with an instrumental idea that then I said, I wonder if I have any lyrics that would make sense with this. And so then I started looking through just some things I had kind of logged away, and I found part, you know, this opening bit of the lyrics that you actually hear. And so I happened to be sitting by my computer or something, and I hit record, and I just started improvising. And it's funny, like, all of the whole instrumental section that kind of speeds up and slows down.
Right.
All of that actually came from just one time of me improvising. And then right after that, I started singing, "Hello, Tom, will you slow down? Hello, are you listening?" Almost just kind of like putting filler lyrics in.
Yeah.
And I didn't really imagine that the form itself I would actually keep. Like, at the time, while I'm just kind of on the fly throwing ideas at the wall, and I happen to be recording. So then later, when I started getting ready to make a record, and I'm going back through all my ideas, and I found this, I was just like, something about it I kept going back to and being like, you know, this is really quirky, but I really, like, think this is super fun. And so I actually ended up relearning all the mandolin bits that I improvised. So it's kind of funny how that works sometimes, that I was like, I listened to the demo enough, I got the idea of all the stops and starts and, like, you know, where I was sort of playing with the time, and I was like, this is actually kind of fun, and if I could lean into that a little bit more but actually just play what I improvised, I think this would be cool. So that's one of the more crazy things that sort of came together.
That's amazing. I mean, that's just amazing.
Writing songs on the record.
Yeah, that's just amazing that it can work that way. When you say you have to read, you know, I've heard musicians say that, and it's never, I get it, but when you're just in that moment, you're just kind of going and things fit together, then you got to go back and kind of relearn your own stuff so that you can put it on a recording.
Well, I think sometimes, improvising essentially is composing, but you're just kind of doing it in real time. You know, you're doing it, like, quickly. You know, it's a quick form of composing that you can't really sit there and think too much about. You're just doing it, you know? And so sometimes I think when you're not able to, you know, criticize yourself, because if you're just improvising and you're allowing yourself to be free and you're recording it, then you're not sitting there and nitpicking every little thing that you just did. You're kind of doing an idea and moving on, and doing an idea and moving on. And it's funny how sometimes I think when you're in that space of improvising without judging too much about what you're doing, sometimes the best stuff can actually happen, lest we become super self-critical when we have a chance to sort of think about it too much.
This whole album, which, and again, I'm talking, if you're tuning in, I'm talking to Sierra Hall about, great new album on Rounder called 25 Trips. The whole album, there's a Father Time, there's a tune, there's an instrumental called The Last Minute. I think that's the only instrumental on the whole album, am I right?
It is, yeah.
And, there are things about time and placements of the person that's singing them. You're in the, at one part, you're in the middle of the woods. The Beautifully Out of Place that you mentioned, you talk about people believing you, Ceiling to Floor has lines in there about "Don't catch me," or and then even I think it's How Long, where there's a line in where the whole theme of it is, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do. I don't know if you're talking to yourself or somebody else, but it's like you have the permission to do these things, and you just got to move forward or move somewhere. But they seem to be more. I don't know what you draw from when you write. I don't want to overanalyze your lyrics because I don't think that's fair to the listener. But the album as a whole has a theme that addresses, time and the passing of time. That's pretty obvious. But some of the positions that the singer is in are kind of not isolated, but can you help me with this? Or looking for a connection or stating there is a connection, but we don't have to analyze lyrics, but I get this whole feel from the album that, but I can't quite put my finger on it. I love it. I love everything about it, but it seems to have a purpose.
Yeah, well, thanks. I think that sometimes when we write songs and, you know, you write a lot over a period of time that's kind of spread out. And for me, you know, I was kind of constantly writing on and off from the time my last record came out till until we put this record out, but a lot of these songs were kind of written in one little chunk even after I started working on the record. And some songs didn't end up making the record that we originally thought would, and we replaced, you know, like How Long, Everybody's Talking, Ceiling to the Floor, The Last Minute, Poison. All these songs were almost last-minute additions, which is kind of funny because I was writing still in the middle of us working on stuff. So we ended up going back in later and recording five or six more things and, you know, just felt that they were good additions to the record. Even though we liked some of the other stuff we had, we just felt like in some ways this maybe made a more rounded record. And I think sometimes these themes at different times in life as you're writing sort of happen without realizing that they are, you know, because a lot of these songs in terms of, I don't know, like harmonic structure or instrumentation, all those things in the way they're presented, it's not like they sound that much alike, but the underlying theme,
there's a theme,
kind of all made sense for a particular record, I think.
That's right.
And you know, yes, in some cases there's plenty of self-reflection and things on this record where I'm, you know, singing from a personal standpoint, but there's also, you know, themes on the record of there's characters and other people that I'm, you know, singing about or singing to. And so I think, yeah, I think sometimes as a writer, you know, we see everything through our own lens. And so sometimes these themes occur without even realizing it. And then you suddenly go, I think this all makes sense for an album.
It does.
So I think that's kind of why we chose this particular group of songs. Obviously, I've written a lot more songs over the past few years that people haven't heard. But we just felt like this particular batch of songs made sense for the story of an album.
I think you said it so well. You said it so well, and I didn't want to like try to squeeze it into a box. It's not that at all. But I did sense there was a theme about it. Can we go to another cut, and then when we come back, I do want to talk about the musicians. I don't know your producer engineer at all. I've seen things that the person has done. I don't even know who it is. But I want you to give credit to all these great musicians as you can. Let's pick a song. You pick it, introduce it, and then we'll come back.
Yeah, so let's play How Long.
Okay.
From the record.
You want to set it up a little bit or?
Sure. Yeah. So How Long is a song that I wrote with my friend Cindy Morgan, who's a great singer-songwriter here in Nashville. And I kind of had this opening idea. My mandolin was actually in the shop. It was being set up. So I had my mandola out, and I was playing it, and I sort of had this idea that I had been messing with for a couple days prior to our recording session, and I had, you know, throw down the anchor, water's only getting deeper. And, you know, I don't know why I started singing Throw Down the Anchor. It just felt good.
And swallow the anchor. You have a phrase in there like swallow the anchor. I said, okay, I'll go with this for a while.
So, you know, it's like, you swallow the anger, your pride is strong, but your body's getting weaker. You know, it's like we basically, I had this opening idea, and I even had a little idea for the bridge that you hear later in the song, but then got together with my friend Cindy Morgan, and we started tossing around ideas, and I said, well, here's a little piece of something. It was very much undeveloped at that point. The idea of How Long wasn't even there. You know, it was just kind of the opening, and then later, you know, we thought, oh, it'd be kind of nice, like, it went to this faster section. I was like, I have this other idea for a bridge that might fit with this, but it's faster, and so... Anyway, we just had a great time writing it, and I'm just, she's a great artist and singer-songwriter in her own right. So, that ended up being one of my favorite tracks on the record. You'll hear Ronnie Bowman, who was one of my favorite singers, and when I was growing up in the bluegrass world, just, you know, love Ronnie Bowman's records, and Stuart Duncan on fiddle, Brian Sutton on guitar, my husband Justin is playing banjo. Dick Krause on bass. I'm playing mandola and tenor guitar and singing an additional harmony part.
It's a great song. It's a great song. Let's listen to How Long from 25 Trips from my guest today, Sierra Hall. That was it. That was How Long. Thanks so much for the introduction, Sierra. By the way, it was a great song. The mandola and you seem to be just made for each other.
Great instrument.
Well, and maybe it's because your singing has become so prominent, and if the range allows, and the tone of it, mandolins don't have to be played fast. They don't have to be played high. But I think the mandola for your singing, when I've seen you live, it just seems to be real comfortable for you, an instrument for you to have. You can do a lot with it, and it seems to fit your vocal style.
Well, so I tell you what, actually, so when you see me live, typically I'm playing the bigger mandolin, which, you know, understandably a lot of people actually do think is a mandola. I'm typically playing octave mandolin.
Oh, that's right.
Which is just an octave. It's even lower than the mandola.
That's right.
But it's G, D, A, E, same tuning, but an octave below. So this actually, how long, that's the first time that I've ever used my mandola on a record. And I haven't been touring with it because you can essentially capo up the octave mandolin to the sixth fret, and you have a C once you put the capo on there.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the fifth fret, and so then you get the C, G, D, A, which is the mandola tuning. So that's what I'm doing when I do the song live, but being able to use the mandola on the record was really cool because I have this old 1926 Gibson mandola that's just really beautiful, and I hadn't had a chance to use it on a recording, so when we kind of wrote the song with me using it, I was like, oh, well, we should just record it this way.
Tell me about your producer. And you've mentioned several of the musicians, which is a good way to do it. But I'm not familiar, although the person, I don't even know if it's a man or woman, has a lot of credits. I just don't know your producer. Can you tell me a little bit about how they got this project?
Yeah, so it's this young female engineer, producer here in Nashville named Shawnee Gandhi. And I knew that I wanted to at least co-produce, if not produce the record myself this time around. But I had, I really had a lot of ideas sonically that I knew could really only be achieved, you know, with the right engineer. And so I started thinking how cool it would be to have a co-producer that could basically collaborate on this record with me, but somebody that was really strong sonically speaking as an engineer. And so I had thought about a whole bunch of different people and even had a meeting with a few different people, and I'd worked with Shawnee a little bit. You know, she's only in her early 30s, and you know, I had worked with her a time or two before, but we didn't know each other really well, and we just got together, and I think, you know, there was just an instant connection as people where it was, you know, for me, I just thought, wow, this would be really fun. We would have a great time making this record together because her vibe is great. She grew up in Australia, but she's been in the States for many years now. And, she's awesome. She's one of the most talented engineers that I've got to work with. And, you know, just on a personal note, it was the first time working with somebody that young on a record, and also the first time working with a female like that as both co-producer and engineer both. So there's something really fun about kind of diving into a record with a peer. You know, most typically my other records I've worked with heroes, which has been amazing, and I've learned so much, but it was really, you know, refreshing and cool to work with someone my own age, basically, like that.
Well, it's another step in the process of your learning and experience, which I think you're always doing. I just think you're always absorbing. Someday I would like to ask you what you listen to. What kind of music are you listening to? Or what are you picking up? But it might take too long. Someday down the road I'll find you and we'll say, what are you listening to?
Well, the short answer is a little of everything.
I knew that. The instrumental we mentioned just a bit last minute, it's one of the longer cuts on the album. And it's a great instrumental. And there's this absolutely soaring fiddle about a minute and 20 seconds left into the thing that just takes off. And I can't identify who that is. Can you tell me about that tune?
So actually it's the same band. We cut the last minute on the same session as How Long. So the band is Stuart Duncan and Brian Sutton.
Okay.
Justin, my husband, playing dobro. And of course I'm playing mandolin. Vic Krauss on bass. I was really excited to have an instrumental on the record. Originally, like I said, How Long was sort of a later addition. I wrote that after we had already started working on the record and we decided to go in and record it. And I knew we were going to have some extra time on the session that day to record, you know, a couple other things probably. And so, with you know, in some ways, working with Stuart Duncan and Brian Sutton, I mean, Brian was on my Daybreak album. Stuart was on both Secrets and Daybreak. You know, he was on my first couple records, and, you know, they both continue to be two of my favorite musicians. I've long been a fan of Vic Krause on bass, and he was on a couple of our earlier sessions where even we had him come over and just overdub on a couple things. Like, that's him playing on, you know, playing on pretty much everything but maybe two tracks on the record that he or two or three tracks, I guess. There's a couple without bass, but yeah, he just blew us away. His tone was so good and he just played so awesome. And so we just had him come in and play, and of course my husband Justin's so extremely talented. And so I was going into the session knowing we were going to do How Long, feeling like that was definitely the band for that song. And I just thought, man, like, this would be the perfect opportunity if I had the right instrumental for us to cut an instrumental, because we have time and we should do it. Whether it makes it on this record or not, we should just have something we record. And so I kind of was going back through. I've written a lot of mandolin instrumentals over the years, and, you know, someday we'll do a mandolin record. But I just, I kind of was digging through everything, and everything just didn't feel like it made sense for this record. I had a lot of different things, and I kept thinking about this particular band. And so I finally just, literally the day before we were going to go in and record, I think we were going to record on a Monday, and this was a Sunday evening, and I was just like, you know what? I've just got to write something, and I've got to, like, I felt like everything I had that I could think of felt too overly complex or something. And I thought, if we have an instrumental on this record, it needs to be a moment of light. Like, it needs to feel singable and, you know, joyful and kind of beautiful. I don't think it needs to be something that makes people, you know, squint their eyebrows and go, that's cool, but what's going on? You know, I wanted it to just be something that felt good to listen to. That you didn't have to work for, you know? And so I just started trying to write something, and I called it The Last Minute because I literally wrote it the night before going in the studio.
Oh, cool.
felt that seemed appropriate. But I definitely wrote it with that particular group of musicians in mind. So you say that about the Soaring Fiddle. I just, yeah, it's like Stuart Duncan. I mean,
he went into another lair.
To do that.
Yeah, man.
And I knew he would bring that to a song like that. So it was kind of, once I started really thinking about the personality of these musicians and how great they would play it, it sort of, again, kind of wrote itself in some ways.
The if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Sierra Hull about her brand new album, 25 Trips on Rounder. The Father Time, the last cut, there's this plush vocal opening, and I assume that's you. Are you singing over yourself, or are you having any help on that?
Definitely some help, yeah. So it's myself, Angel Snow, who was a co-writer on Escape, that song, and Mindy Smith helped me co-write Father Time. So Mindy Smith, and then Ron Bach actually is singing on there. So I think that's it. I think it's, yeah, me, Angel, Mindy, and Ron. But I definitely wanted to feel like a choir in a way, so we just kind of decided to have actually multiple voices even from the same person. So we had Mindy sing lead and harmony, and Angel sing lead and harmony, and, you know, we kind of stacked it all
together. Okay, yeah, it's a real plush sound. It sounds great, and the song is just intriguing to me. Father Time, you actually have a line where you're talking about Christmas in June, and not long after that you throw in just a little melody line from a Christmas song. And I just,
yeah.
I just wonder,
that.
Well, you know, I try, and I thought, oh, wait a minute.
I really did.
I always try to do that, and I kind of chuckled at that. So, Father Time, you have Christmas in June, but and again, the album is Time. There's a clock on the cover. You're holding this giant clock, which is too big for you. but it makes the point.
Tell
me a little bit about Father Time. Then I want to touch a little bit on one more tune, and I know you can't stay here forever, and I want to pick a tune to go out on. But Father Time, we talked about the vocals. Talk a little bit about that experience of putting that together.
Well, so this song was inspired by spending a week with my husband, Justin, and his grandma. We had gone out to East Tennessee, where his family lives, for Christmas. And I think it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. I can't even remember now. But his grandpa had a stroke. And it was just this, you know, kind of scary moment in time. And thankfully, we were there. We were in town. And so we were able to go, you know, basically move in with his grandma and be with her, because his grandpa had to be in the hospital, and she can't stay by herself. She's been suffering from Alzheimer's disease for many years now, and we spent lots of time with them. Every time we go out and visit, they live next door to his mom and dad, and so we'll go to visit Justin's folks, and we can drop in and stay a couple hours with them, and then we go visit his, you know, mom and dad. And so, you know, you have these short visits, so we were well aware, like, of course, you know, she's been slowly declining with her memory for a long time now. She, you know, can't ever remember me, but now it's like she's can't remember her own children's name most of the time. And, you know, it's this, like, really sad thing that almost everybody I know has some link or tie to somebody that has experienced this with a loved one or a family member. But it actually was the most beautiful thing to get to, like, be in her world, not just for an hour or two, but to actually, like, be in her home and be there with her for an entire week. And for me, just seeing my husband and the way, watching the two of them together and watching how, just taking a step back and seeing how much he, you know, loved and cared for her, and this kind of experience was just really beautiful. And they have this grandfather clock in their house that goes off on the half hour. So, for some reason, I don't know why it doesn't go off on the hour, but it goes off on the half hour. And you know that familiar da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that sound.
Yeah.
So I kept hearing this. I kept hearing this over and over for this week that we were with her and just watching them together. And I was just like, my goodness, like, if this isn't song-worthy, I don't know what is. So I was just like, I've got to find a way to put this in the song. And I felt that the clock, you know, had so much to do with it. It had to be in there somewhere. And so it was also Christmas time, so we're playing a lot of Christmas music for her. We had our instruments with us. And I don't know what it was, Steve, but something about Jingle Bells. Like, when we were playing every song we could think of, just trying to keep her entertained. and we played Jingle Bells, and she, like, I don't know, she loved it. She just, something about Jingle Bells really stuck. So now she wants to hear Jingle Bells year-round.
Okay.
So if we take our instruments and we play for her.
I get it.
So
okay.
It's Christmas time here in June.
That's right.
She wants to hear it. It don't matter when it is. So we can play, you know, she knows, but she can remember these words to old hymns. So it's like you can start singing, you know, I'll Fly Away or anything like that. And she can say, she remembers more words than we do, which is amazing, you know. It really just brings this thing out. But then we'll play something, and then she'll say, can you play Jingle Bells?
Oh,
and it's so funny.
Oh, gosh.
Because we're like, we never knew, what is it about Jingle Bells? And that week we spent with her, but Jingle Bells became her jam.
Okay.
So I was like, we got to get that in there somewhere, too, in the song. So,
well, you did.
So there's all these little things that are actually, like, 100% true in the story of Justin's grandma.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful song and a really sweet, sweet story. I'm glad you shared that. Really nice, really nice.
Oh, thanks.
The other thing I wanted to, we've talked off and on about several of the tunes, but we haven't talked about Envy yet, which is intriguing to me. It's almost, you can talk about it. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but tell me a little bit about the song Envy. Then I want to talk to you about another topic.
No, it's always interesting to hear what somebody else has to say.
I'm not going to that one.
No, Envy, you know, the idea of, I don't remember what originally gave me the idea of putting Envy in the form of a character, like making Envy almost like a character of its own. So it's like, you know, kind of trying to characterize all the things about, you know, I don't think any of us are attracted to that feeling, whether it's something we personally experience or something we see in others when somebody's envious. It's not always the most, like, pleasant thing. And so, you know, I think at some point I just had the idea of, like, you know, thinking about how we can all at times find ourselves, like, feeling things that we don't like to feel. And so, you know, you kind of push those things away. And so, anyway, I wouldn't say that that's, like, some emotion I struggle with too much, but I love the idea of making it a character and trying to make the music reflect that sort of disjointed feeling that an emotion like that can bring out in us, you know? So.
It's a great device for something like that, and everybody has those minutes of envy. It's normal. And you try to ignore it, and you realize, well, that's just silly. But it happens, but you push it away because it's ultimately destructive,
totally.
I think. It's completely destructive to anything that you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's horrible. It's horrible if you really lean into something like that. And I think it's sort of like, as individuals, we can put a lot of pressure on ourselves to, like, want to be more than what we are already. And so I think sometimes we can compare ourselves to other people and, you know, kind of think, well, I need to be this or I need to be that. And, you know, so I think I was trying to somewhat lean into that whole idea of the feeling of envy and comparing ourselves to others and, you know, basically saying, envy, you won't win. Like, this is not me. This is not I'm not gonna put up with it.
Yeah, I think it's one of the seven deadly sins too. I think it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Listen.
Absolutely.
We are talking at an odd moment in time. I've never experienced it. I'm much older than you, but all of a sudden, so many musicians and so much of the economy right now in the United States and maybe the world. If you would mind, you had a very loaded. I've seen your tour schedule, which now doesn't exist. And I'm talking to people over these last couple of days, musicians, about this unprecedented and incredible, all of a sudden you can't perform for people. And you can do things maybe online, but where are you going to get the people back? Where are you going to get the feedback from the people? And I just know if you had any thoughts about where from here.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really knows where from here just yet. I think it's a little soon to know. It is wild how much in a matter of what felt like days, maybe even hours, things changed and shifted from, you know, thinking, okay, in my particular case, we were getting ready. We were on the road, actually. We had just played in Knoxville, Tennessee at the Tennessee Theater with Tommy Emmanuel. And we had two other shows with Tommy that we were going to play in Cincinnati and Louisville, and we were going out for 3 days, then we were coming home, and basically after we came home, we were getting ready to head down toward Florida for a festival and then fly out to the West Coast and do a whole month of touring. I mean, we had 28 shows cancel, and so far, you know, who knows what happens even beyond that. That was just up through the end of April, so I don't know what happens beyond this, but yeah, we were out in Knoxville, and then it was kind of like, well, we're going home because the next two shows are canceled, and then it went from those two shows being canceled to everything being canceled. So, yeah, it's kind of a strange thing to have just put out an album and then 2 weeks later be getting ready to get into the busiest part of the album release tour, and then it all just kind of, you know, has to go away. So I feel like everybody's feeling that. It is, you know, it's disappointing. I'm really proud of the band that I get to play with and these amazing musicians, and we have really been working hard on the music, and, you know, we're starting to really had a few shows under our belt, and we're starting to feel, you know, like we're really playing the music and digging in, and it was feeling good and exciting. So I know we were all just, you know, money aside, I mean, of course, it's a huge loss financially for everyone on my entire team. You know, there was like seven of us on the road, and that's, you know, that's a bummer for sure, not counting my management and booking agent and people like that
right.
behind the scenes that also, you know, see their income depleted for the next few months. But just from a personal note, it's a bummer because we were all so excited to get out and play this music that I've been, you know, that I've been working on for a long time and has finally released into the world, and now it's all, you know, at a standstill.
Yeah.
But it's hard to complain, you know, because everybody's feeling it. So I'm okay. I'm not sitting around crying about it or anything. I feel like things will work out as they're supposed to, and we have to do what's right for the whole world right now.
You know,
not just our own selfish thing.
Right. You can't overstate the obligation, but as a performing artist, performing being the first part of that descriptor, what happened? You've got all this built up. You've got this great album, which is on Rounder and available now, but you don't get to perform, and that has to be a big part of, you know, you're ready to do it. You want to see the audience. You interact. Audiences love you. What happens to that part of the artist, the performing part? I can't even conceive. I can't even conceive of being something that important to your identification and should be, and you are so good at it, and you don't get to perform.
It's a bummer. It really is. It's a huge, huge blow emotionally to have that happen. But at the same time, Steve, like, part of me is just like, gosh, well, you know, at least not only is this happening right now, but I live here in Nashville, and what was it, like a week, 2 weeks ago now when the tornado blew through.
That's right.
And I found myself just yesterday. I had to go run an errand. You know, I'm trying to stay in as much as possible, but I had to go run an errand and, like, was driving just, you know, 2 miles from my house. And I there's this particular stretch of houses that basically were just destroyed. And I looked and I thought, man, what about those people? Like, they don't even have a home to hunker down in right now. You know, at least I've got, like, a roof over my head,
right.
plenty of food in my fridge.
That's right.
Toilet paper.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we thanks to my husband, we didn't even have to go, panic buy. And that's something.
<You're>
when you tour a lot, you're not home, you see. So
no, that's right. That's right.
Around a little longer,
that's right. That's right.
But anyway, I just, you know, I literally just thought, gosh, what about all those people?
Like, well,
where
right.
are they right,
right
now?
Right.
I don't even know where some of my neighbors are right now. I say neighbors, they're not people I know personally. They live, you know, 10 minutes down the road or whatever. But it's just, I've got a lot to be grateful for right now.
And I'm
not sitting around
too
bummed out about it. I feel like hopefully the more people take this seriously and stay in and we all work together, you know, for the greater good, the quicker we can all get back to, you know, yes, get back to work, but also get back to being together and sharing musical moments and hanging out and all the things that I know as a society we really love to do, sharing meals and all those things. So,
right.
you know, fingers crossed, but I think there's a lot of unknown right now. And, personally, this is the most time that I've had home. I went from thinking I was going to be gone for the next month and a half to all of a sudden I'm home for a month and a half. And I'm getting to spend this time with my husband, and I'm getting to, you know, clean my house and practice. And, you know, there's something kind of restful and nice about it at the same time, too, if I'm being totally honest. So,
well, good.
You know.
Good. Well, listen.
I'll try to keep looking on the sunny side.
You have to, and I think you're doing a good job of it, and you've described it all very well. I just wanted some reaction, and you gave me the perfect one. Before I let you go, I want you to send us out with one more tune from the 25 Trips album. You pick it, short intro, and then I'll let you go.
Yeah, well, how about we do, just because it feels appropriate, everybody's talking, but nobody knows what they're talking about.
Yeah,
so this is everybody's talking.
Yeah.
Featuring the great Katie Pruitt, who's got a wonderful record out recently as well on Rounder Records that folks should check out.
We'll do that. We'll play from 25 Trips. Sierra Hall, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I enjoy seeing you play, and I will again soon once we get all these things behind us. And we'll catch up somewhere down the road. Thanks so much for all of the great insight into 25 trips. Phenomenal. You just keep getting better and better. And you've only had 25 trips so far, so you're going to have a lot more. And you do so many great things with the concepts that you have. And at the relatively young age, you're melding these things into the sound that you want. So I'm very appreciative of what you put into 25 trips. That being said, I'll let you go, and the audience will then hear everybody's talking. Thanks so much.
I so appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and stay well out there.
We will. I'll see you. Bye.